The Ireland-Portugal Business Network is comprised of more than 200 member companies based in Portugal and Ireland. These companies are from a wide range of industries and professions and represent in excess of 25,000 people.
So good morning, everyone. I've met most of you, but I haven't met all of you. So I'm just going to take this opportunity for health and safety reasons. If you haven't met me and I haven't ticked you off my little list, if you can come and find me later, okay? Because I count 72 people here. So thank you so much for all coming out this morning. So we're honoured this morning to have Rita Marquez with us. We think she likes us because this is the second time that she's come to talk with us, and the first time was in 2022 when we had the Ireland-Portugal Economic Relations Conference, and we're really grateful to have her here again. Please excuse my pronunciation of the following words. Rita is the president of the Livreira Lelo Foundation. Not bad. Which is in the top 10 of places to visit in Porto, in Time Out magazine, in The Lonely Planet. TripAdvisor as well, and it's officially the most beautiful bookshop in the world. And if you haven't been, I suggest you do. Despite the queues, it's really worth it. And the bookstore attracts 1.2 million visitors a year, and it's been voted the most magical place to visit by trainee wizards. Rita is also the former Secretary of State for Tourism, Trade and Services, serving during the toughest time for the tourism globally during the pandemic. And she is the champion of the Innovation Tourism Hub at Porto Business School. And I know we have lots of people here from Porto Business School, so welcome. And Executive Committee Member of the United Nations World Tourism Organization. It just makes me wonder, when does this woman sleep? And I wonder if maybe she has a little bit of wizardry in herself as well. So Rita, please come to the stage. Okay, thank you, Rita, welcome. Let's talk about the iconic bookstore and the foundation of the Monastery of Lessa di Baglio. Mm-hmm. Not bad again. Which is as famous to people passing by on the Camino de Santiago as the bookstore is to Harry Potter fans. So please tell us about the future of both.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. IPBN, I like you, yes, you like me, so it seems that we are dating. So thank you again for having me on the stage. Thank you, Raquel, now. to have the chance to meet as well. And let me thank our co-host, Adrian, because I think he has investing so much in the country, not only in Porto and Douro region, so thank you for your trust and commitment towards our country. Luis, my great friend, thank you so much, all of you. Going back to the question, yes, I'm with the Livraria Lelo Foundation, so I guess most of you know Livraria Lelo, so that's the most, as you said, the most iconic bookstore in the country. In fact, yes, it hosts 1.2 million tourists. Not only tourists, in fact, because there are a lot of Portuguese people, locals that visit the place. And it's in the top three national speaking. So we have, of course, Mosteiro dos Jerónimos back in Lisbon. That's the most visited place. And then we have Sintra. And then we have, you know, a private business, the Livraria Bookstore. The Livraria Lelo Bookstore. And it's funny because, again, it's a family-owned business, but they have several business, in fact. So they have an entrepreneurial park, so a business park. They have Livraria Lelo. And their idea is pretty much around talent, meaning that, okay, so what can we do in order to guarantee that we attract and retain and capture the attention of talent to stay in Porto? So that's their motto. And of course they are investing a lot in the cultural dimension. And they bought a monastery, so wow. So in fact it's a very special place because it's a national monument. So we don't have a lot of national monuments, as you can understand, that are owned by private entities. But in fact these guys bought the monument back in 2016. And they have invited the Pritzker architect, most of you know, Álvaro Siza Vieira, to revamp the place. So it's a cultural hub, and I have the privilege to work there. So basically, you know, we have been exploring these synergies around the bookstore because, you know, we can attract people that go to the bookstore and also to move them, to invite them to visit the monastery. And it's good for tourists because as we saw or heard by from Luis, you know, we have to guarantee that tourists not only stay in Porto, but they have to stay to visit Gaia. They have to go to Matosinhos, so we need to also, this is a way to manage tourism in a sustainable way. So basically that's what we are, you know, trying to achieve here, to create a new cultural hub. It's not going to be a district, so it's something different. And it takes advantage of the fact that it's really is in the middle of the Caminhos de Santiago, so St. James Way. And so we are attracting a lot of not only people that visit Livraria Lelo, the bookstore itself, but also people that are, you know, doing the Caminho, that are doing their way towards Santiago de Compostela. So it's a great product, tourist product again. And Luis mentioned it very wisely, by the way.
Yeah, so lots of pilgrimage passing through as well.
All of us are pilgrims, right, in this war, in this life, I guess.
So the bookstore's planning an expansion after over 100 years. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm not in the commercial activities in the of the bookstore itself, but yes, last month, in fact, the 30, I think it was in the last day of October, they presented a new project in order to enlarge the facilities. We are talking about 300 square meters, 300 square meters. So it's really tight, you know. You know, can you imagine 1 point? You've been there yesterday, was, right? You saw the line.
They said, it's not really busy. Don't get this much in water.
But I saw the picture, so you were alone in the stairs, so lucky you, right?
Yeah,
1 second. You paid someone, right? So as I was telling you, so they presented an extension to the building. So they hired again, inviting Cisa Vieira to do an extension of the building. So they bought the building next door and they are creating their, you know, another type of experience, or it's the same experience, but it's extension. So, you know, you get into the bookstore and then you can move to the other building to enlarge, I would say, their value proposition. So everything's running smoothly. The project has been approved. It's not easy to get a project approved in the country. We know that. We saw that. We've been there. So it has been approved. And the construction works have just started. So I guess that in 1 year or so, everything will be ready. Not to host 1.2 million, but maybe 2 point something million. I don't know. Yeah. You know, the sky is the limit. So
I heard it going on yesterday, so it's kind of started, right, as well. So we talked about the queues, and there's no doubt that tourism is at its peak in Porto. So what does that mean for local people?
I don't agree when you say peak, because, you know, we are talking about a quality peak. No, we have not achieved that. So a quantity peak, well, who knows? I think if we say, we reached the limit, there is no more dream, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, we reached the limit. Okay, we've been there, so there is no dream. So we still dream, right? We still dream. And so there are a lot of dimensions that we need to work on, especially quality and authenticity and sustainability. And so I really feel that we did not reach the peak, or at least the desired peak. That's why we are still attracting investment to the sector. We are still attracting airline routes, for instance. And Luis mentioned Jet2, for instance, and he's working a lot on that. I mentioned because I guess that you do not approach that, but 85% of the people that get into the city or in the region, I would say, come by plane. So we need to attract new routes. So what have we need to do? You know, tourism, in order to achieve the peak that you were talking about. Tourism is a sector, it's people to people, or people from, you know, it's people. So we need to really retain talent, work on the teams that are serving, that are hosting tourists. And these people, most of them are locals. So I think it's a good win-win, you know, to create jobs, to create a wealthier standard of life. And I guess that's when we will achieve the peak. It's a win-win approach both for tourists and of course for locals, for the guys, not locals, not necessarily Portuguese, because we do have a lot of migrants and we need them, but for people that work here, that live here.
Thank you. And so you told me last week that you believe 10 years from now that every aspect of tourism will be rooted in sustainable practices. Can you tell us what that will look like?
Yeah, unfortunately, we are talking too much about sustainability. You know, we are not not acting so much. But for me, sustainability is empathy. Empathy towards the planet, empathy towards the people. And this kind could be, you know, a little bit poetic. But in fact, that's how I see this. And when you're talking about tourism, so basically the businessmen and women have to understand, and they are getting there, by the way, that everything they do has to be done in a responsive way, meaning that when they hire someone, is a course about, you know, the salary, the paycheck at the end of the year or the month, but it's all about training and retaining and pampering that person that's going to be the hosts from that day onwards. So it's about, of course, the planet as well, you know, guaranteeing that all the investment that is made, it's made in a responsible way. And so when I say that sustainability is going to be the cornerstone of everything, is that because we don't need to think much more about, you know, can we be creative? It's nothing about creativeness. It's nothing about, you know, being... It's very simple. It's crystal clear, I would say. You know, go straight to the point. When you hire someone, try to train them, convince them to stay, because we do have a lot of turnover as well in tourism sector, and that's not good for the business, I would say, and for the planet, you know, to make the green investments, everything. And there is a lot of, I would say, incentives to do that. Even Turismo de Portugal, our National Tourism Board, just launched a couple of days ago a sustainability financing scheme. So basically, when you are an investor, if you want to have some help, from the state or from the National Tourism Board, there is a specific funding line that could help you on that. So there are a lot of schemes here, a lot of helps, a lot of aids that you can benefit from.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm going to move on now. As Secretary of State, you oversaw several initiatives that furthered Portugal's commitment to the UN Sustainable Development Goal. Can you tell us what the goal is, and can you tell us what initiatives that you drove?
Yeah, there was, you know, when I was Secretary of State for Tourism and Commerce and Services, because I had everything except industry, we were really struggling at the time, you know, because when I joined the government, you know, the tourism was getting higher and higher. I was called the happy Secretary of State, and from you know, all about happiness. Oh, people were, so, my colleagues were so jealous. You cannot imagine. I remember that they were, I would love to have that job over there. But suddenly something happened, right? Our life changed. And I was like, okay. And I think the strategy at the time, or at least for me, was to maintain the focus. And we did not want, I was always telling myself, you don't want to survive. That's too little. You know, in Portuguese we say, é pouquinho, it's too little. You don't want to survive, you just want to leader. You want to take, you know, you want to be the first one to show up with a couple of initiatives that will make the difference. And answering to your question, so the first initiative we met immediately with Luís de Araújo, at the time was the president of National Tourism Board, and we said, we need the clean and safe stamp. So we had a kind of certification. And in fact, we launched that maybe 3 weeks after the pandemic, and it was the first country to, you know, to train people to guarantee that they had all the standards being met as far as hygiene and whatever that related with the pandemic things. So that's immediately what you've done. So basically we lead the way, and of course we had a lot of followers. Even the Commission, you know, was calling us, the European Commission was calling us, you know, trying to copy the model and well. So then trying, you know, because they thought it was something useful. And at the time, another example that I would like to disclose and to share with you is training, because we thought everybody was at home, right? We were at home, we could not move. And so we thought, well, we do have our schools at the time, the tourism-related, so the tourism schools, and so we have to invest heavily in online training. And basically, that's what we did for 2 years. So we trained more than, I would say, 500,000 people. Everything was free. So creating contact. And by the way, the portal, the training academy, the online training academy still exists. So everyone that's here, so if you log in, you have a laundry list of courses that are free of charge, that don't have any cost, in fact, involved, and you can be trained in whatever you want to be trained in. So these type of initiatives show that we did not want just to survive at the time during the pandemic, we just wanted to lead the way. And fortunately, everything turned out to be okay at the end of it, you know, and Portugal now is booming, and it's being considered stronger than ever, I would say, as far as tourism is concerned.
And you know, from someone not from the industry, what training were they given online? And how was that done? Like live or videos or?
We had several models. So we had real time training. So basically, we had all the professors that used to teach in the schools that were at home, you know, teaching. You know, but we always at the time we recorded those sessions as well, so people that might not be available at the time to watch the sessions, so the sessions were recorded, and that's pretty much what we did. So the content is there. Some is still updated, some is still valid, some other is not updated anymore. So again, it's, you know, you could, when something like this happens, like when pandemic hit us, you always have two alternatives in life, right? Mm-hmm. Or just wait for things to pass by and you stay quiet, or you just grab an opportunity and say, oh well, this era, a crisis is always an opportunity, right? And that's pretty much what we did. And in fact, we did not need so much investment because people were there, so we did not need so much money. So we only needed our will and energy and focus. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the recipe that we follow at the time.
God, do you remember the pandemic?
Yeah.
Yeah, masks, social distancing, bleaching our shopping. Was that just me that did that as well? So at the Tourism Hub in Porto Business School, one area you're championing is attracting and retaining talent. You've mentioned that as well. And as someone from outside the EU, I'm just keen to learn how migrants are being included in the evolving tourism landscape.
Yeah, I love the stuff that we do at Porto Business School. Like I said, I have some students here from Porto Business School, so I have this privilege, you know, to work with young and fresh people, fresh-minded people, that help me to challenge myself and challenge the status quo of the market. And one of the things, you know, everybody's talking about migrants, and in fact, we need them. So. And what we have to do again is to take this opportunity to take these people and train them and hire them and capture them and pamper them and make them ours in the sense. So they will be also part of the business. And this is, I would say, a great asset, because since we are hosting international people, having international people serving foreigner people or foreign people serving other foreign people, it's something that usually people appreciate. And this, not, in my opinion, does this not jeopardize or puts in danger authenticity. That's at least what I think. So at Porto Business School, what you have done is trying to, we launch a kind of a observatory, a migrant observatory. So basically we interviewed tons of companies and try to understand what type of talent policies they had. And we found out that 40% of the Portuguese companies do not have anything related with talent attraction or retaining policies as far as migrants are concerned. And so this really puzzles me. And I was really sad at that time. I said, come on, 45% of the tourism companies don't have anything special to deliver to the migrants, even if they believe that they are necessary, because they are for the business. So this is kind of I would say very bad. So that's what, from that point onwards, what we are doing, you know, is to work with the companies, making them aware that it's quite easy to have, you know, an inclusion policy, train these people, give them the basics, and not the basics, also the more than the basics, for them to be in our team and to guarantee that the quality peak that we are talking about a couple minutes ago is achievable. Right? Because they are part of the team. And that's pretty much what they have been doing at Porto Business School.
And is there like a particular area that's skill short that you really can't attract people into?
In the tourism sector?
Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, all areas are quite short. You know, we need people. It's a recent study pointed out, not from Porto Business School, but from an association, a tourism association, said that, you know, more than, I'd say, I think they said 80,000 people are needed in the tourism sector. So we are pretty much 400,000 at the time as a workforce in tourism. So maybe we might need 20% more in order to deliver what we have to deliver. Because again, we are not talking about tourist masses. We are talking about quality. And for that to happen, we need to have, you know, trained people. And that's one of, I would say, biggest challenges nowadays in the sector.
Yeah, so in Lisbon, where I live, they're saying now that in the next 5 years, if the housing crisis isn't sorted out in some way, the only way you're going to have tourists being served in the cafes is by other tourists. Yeah. So is that happening
itself,
here?
Right?
Yeah. Come to Lisbon and serve coffee. Okay, and finally, what do you think it is about Porto that keeps bringing people back?
Well, I'm biased. I'm from Porto, so I'm biased. Right. I could say myself, right? So all of us, I would say people from Porto, I think are kind of special, I have to say. Well, we try to be very humble. I think we are humble, maybe too much, I would say. But at the same time, we are very, I would say, generous. And, you know, It's something that always puzzles me when I get home after a long trip. It's like, okay, people are smiling and try to be, you know, smiling at the street, you know, helpful, always helpful if you are lost. I think this something that makes people like Porto. That's the first reason. So people, local people, all right. But there are always other dimensions. So there are multiple Portos. Right? We have, you know, the cultural, vibrant part of the city, and we see this with WOW, another, or the bookstore. But we also have this artistic way that needs to be explored. So we have, you know, new trends that we grab, that we take this opportunity. I think that we are quite creative as well. So we lose resources, because sometimes we lose resources. These make us, you know, to be more creative, because at the end of the day, yeah, we don't have so much resources, so we have to invent, to have to imagine, to dream, and that's pretty much what makes people come back again. And Porto, we have several Portos, in fact, so city is a very multi-dimensional city, so you can stay here in September and have a great experience near the Douro River, but you can also come in Christmas time and you go shopping in the main streets of Porto and you have a different experience as well. Or move to the north, Minho, Trás-os-Montes, or to other regions, like Luís was saying, and there is always a lot to discover. Just to end, I just want to point it out that most of the clients or the tourists that we host in Porto or in the region are repeated customers, by the way. So we do have a lot of repeated, a lot of people coming back every 2 years or so. So this shows that, you know, our value proposition is kind of elastic and can be very generous to all.
Well, thank you, Rita.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Give Rita a round of applause. Thank you.
This has been a production of the IPBN in partnership with Pinkroom. For more information, visit us online at island-portugal.com and on LinkedIn at Island Portugal Business Network. For more IPBN podcasts, find us on Spotify or visit our website for the full list of episodes.